All right, so you guys sent this stuff in, and I gotta say, this deep dive is a wild one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a visual quote about freedom of speech. It's in German, by the way.
Totally.
And then we've got like these pictures of antique goblets. I mean, what?
Can't see.
Right. And then there's a slide that says like test frog and quiz questions. And to top it all off, there's this super official legal presentation about, wait for it, insulting the Austrian president.
You're kidding?
I'm not. So yeah, buckle up because we are going deep on this one.
It's like we're piecing together some kind of Austrian puzzle.
You got that right. But where do we even begin? Oh, I know the quote. It says, "Freiheit ist das Recht, anderen zu sagen, was sie nicht hören wollen." And for those of you who don't speak fluent German, that means
Freedom is the right to tell other people what they do not want to hear.
bingo. And get this, it's attributed to George Orwell.
Orwell,
Yeah.
interesting. He always did love a good debate. But what does all this have to do with Austrian law, antique goblets? I'm intrigued, to say the least.
Okay, Sherlock, you've piqued my interest. Let's get into it. Hit me with the legal stuff.
Right. Well, so unlike a lot of other places in Europe, Austria still has these laws, right? Laws against blasphemy.
Blasphemy, like taking the Lord's name in vain.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. There's a thing called Section 188 CGB. It's all very official.
Catchy.
Yeah, catchy. Anyway, basically, it means you can't just go around, denigrating religious
So
doctrines.
you can't be disrespectful to religion, basically.
Exactly. And this presentation, it's all about how those laws clash with, you guessed it, freedom of speech.
Ah, I see where this is going. It's that classic debate, right? Freedom of speech versus protecting people's beliefs.
Exactly. And this presentation just jumps right into the debate. No messing around.
How so?
It starts with a
A
quiz.
quiz. Okay, I love a good
On
quiz.
like slides 4 and 5, right? It asks how many times each Austrian president, during their time in office, has approved requests for prosecution for, get this, insults against the president.
Juicy. So we're talking about like slander and libel and all that.
Exactly. And the numbers are kind of shocking,
See, I'm
honestly.
on the edge of my seat. Spill the tea.
Okay, so the current president, Alexander Van der Bellen, he's approved 7 prosecutions during his time.
Seven. That's a lot.
Right. Now, his predecessors, Heinz Fischer and Thomas Klistel, they approved none. Zero.
Wow. That's a pretty big difference.
And get this, they all received around the same number of requests for prosecution, like 5 each.
Wow, so President Van der Bellen is not afraid to crack down on those insults. What could explain that?
Well, the presentation throws out a few ideas.
Like what?
Well, maybe it's, just the president's personality. Maybe he's just more, how do you say, polarizing.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Like maybe he's just more likely to rub people the wrong way.
Exactly. Or maybe, law enforcement, they're just like better trained now, so they're spotting more of these insults.
That's a good point.
Or maybe it's something a little darker, like there's just more hate and contempt in society these days.
Okay, whoa, that took a turn. I gotta ask, before we spiral into an existential crisis here, what about those antique goblets and the quiz questions? It all seems a little random, even for us.
Right. It's true. It's like they're these little hints, like they're trying to tell us something about, I don't know, Austria's history.
You think so?
Maybe. Like these goblets, they look ancient. Maybe they're a symbol of how long religion has been important in Austria,
That's an interesting thought. Like those goblets have seen centuries of like religious ceremonies and stuff.
Exactly. And the quiz questions, maybe they're there to make us question those assumptions,
Ooh, I like that. Okay, so we've got these historical vibes, but then we're also dealing with some very current, very real legal questions. Speaking of, what happens next in this legal thriller?
Well, things get a little more, shall we say, intense.
How so?
Well, there are these 8 texts, and they're all up for discussion.
Ooh, what kind of texts?
And just so you know, there's a disclaimer. It says these texts are for discussion only, not like the presenter agrees with them or anything.
Okay, good to know. Lay it on me.
Okay, text 1, whoever reads this text is an idiot.
Well, that's not very nice.
I know, right? Okay, text 2. God is a vain, selfish tyrant who wants to be worshipped by opportunists.
Okay, that's a bold statement.
Right. Okay. Text 3. God is a mass murderer.
Whoa. Okay, that escalated quickly.
I know. And it gets even more intense. Text 4. The prophet Muhammad was a pedophile.
Okay, now things are getting really uncomfortable. It's like all of these statements are provocative, you know, they all kind of target different groups, different beliefs. Mm. Is there a pattern there, or am I overthinking it?
I think that's something to keep in mind as we go through the rest of this, for sure. You're right to be looking for patterns, for sure. Let's hear what the next few texts say. Text 5. Men who lie with men as with a woman have committed an abomination. They shall be put to death.
Wow. Okay, that one is just, like, really heavy.
Yeah.
And kind of scary, honestly.
Right? Yeah, no, I hear you. Text 6. Men who have sexual relations with each other shall be put to death.
That sounds really familiar. Where have I heard that before?
That one's from the Bible, actually. Leviticus chapter 20, verse 13, to be precise.
The Bible, huh?
Yep. And just to keep those biblical references coming, text 7 says, but as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death.
So we're quoting the Bible now, are we?
We are. What do you think?
I mean, wow, heavy stuff. It's a good thing we have that disclaimer. What about that last text?
Okay, last one, text 8. In this place stood a perverse synagogue.
Whoa! Okay, that one is just chilling, especially given, you know, Austria's history with the Holocaust.
Yeah.
It's amazing how just a few words can carry so much, like, weight. You know,
it really shows how, like, even religious language can be used to hurt people, you know, and it highlights this weird line that the presentation is walking. Like, the presenter even points out that the things said in texts 5 through 8, they're presented as, like, facts in their own religious or historical contexts.
So what we've got here is, like, personal insults, and then we've got accusations against religious figures, and then we've got these statements that, like, some people might say are hate speech against entire groups of people. Talk about an ethical dilemma.
There's a lot to unpack, that's for sure.
It really is. And speaking of unpacking, this presentation takes another turn for the, well, dare I say, a dramatic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a slide that just says, crank dirt religion.
Sick through religion.
Yeah. Is it saying what I think it's saying?
Well, it's definitely a bold statement, right? The slide basically says that religious teachings, you know, the ones about sin and punishment especially, they can really mess people up.
Like cause mental health issues.
Exactly.
Wow. Does the presentation, like, get into specifics?
Oh, yeah. It lists all sorts of stuff. Depression, anxiety, ADHD, even, like, suicidal thoughts and pedophilia. It's a lot.
It's like they're saying that religion can make you sick. I mean, come on. That's a pretty big claim.
It is.
I mean, you can't deny that fear and guilt are powerful motivators, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But to say they can cause all those issues, that's intense. I have to say, this whole deep dive is starting to feel a little heavy, you know?
I hear you.
You mentioned earlier about those patterns we were seeing.
Right.
Do we see those same patterns, like, reflected in how Austrian law actually deals with these statements? Or is it just a bunch of talk?
That's the million-dollar question. And you know what? The presentation actually answers it straight up with this slide called Factin.
Facts.
Fact.
Okay, good. After that emotional roller coaster, I need some hard facts.
Yep.
Hit me. What are the facts?
Okay, so get ready for this. The presentation says that not a single religious figure or publisher has ever been punished in Austria for spreading, like, homophobic or atheist-hating stuff, or even stuff that, like, glorifies genocide.
Wait, seriously?
Seriously. They even say that these kinds of things are, like, everywhere. Churches, hotels, you name it, and no one bats an eye, legally speaking.
So what I'm hearing is that while these texts we heard, while they might be, you know, unsettling, they're not actually illegal in Austria.
Exactly.
Okay. But what about the Bible itself? I mean, it seems to tick a few boxes on that list of, you know, potentially offensive content.
That's what I'm saying. The presentation actually calls out the Bible specifically.
No.
Yeah. It claims that the Bible has all sorts of offensive language, you know, against gay people, against atheists. It even says that it causes fear in children. But guess what? No law enforcement agency is going after the Bible anytime soon.
It seems like a double standard. So, like, what happens when the tables are turned? What if someone criticizes, like, a religion other than Christianity? What then?
Okay, so get this. The presentation gives this fascinating example, right? Back in 2009, there was this speaker at a Freedom Party of Austria training event, and this guy got fined because he called the Prophet Muhammad a pedophile.
Okay, so he got in trouble for that.
Oh, yeah, big time. The case even went all the way to the European Court of Human Rights.
Whoa! Okay, hold on a minute, though. Didn't you just say that nobody gets punished for spreading, like, homophobic stuff, even if it's, like, presented as religious fact?
Right.
So how can calling Muhammad a pedophile be punishable? Spreading homophobic views based on religious texts isn't.
It just seems like it all depends on like which religion you're targeting.
You're telling me.
Yeah.
It seems like a major contradiction. And it's a question that the presentation really digs into. Like, to understand why the court punished that speaker, you have to look at how they justified it, right?
Oh.
They said that what the speaker said, it wasn't just objective criticism of Islam. It was like this targeted attack meant to like trash Muhammad's reputation.
Okay, so intent matters. It's not just about what you say, but why you're saying it.
Exactly.
But then wouldn't you say that calling the Bible like homophobic is also an attack on its reputation?
Right.
It seems like we're getting into really murky waters here. For sure. It's like this legal gray area where nobody really knows what's okay and what's not. And you want to know something? The presentation throws in another curveball.
Of course it does. Hit me.
Remember that text from earlier, the one about Muhammad being a pedophile?
Yeah.
Well, there's this newspaper, Der Standard. They published an article and they used that same phrase.
Whoa, really? So both the speaker at that political thing and the newspaper, they both said pretty much the same thing about Muhammad.
Basically, yeah.
So did the newspaper get in trouble too?
Okay, so here's where it gets crazy. The newspaper, they faced no consequences whatsoever.
Wait, what? How is that possible?
Right. It's wild. They basically said that, like, okay, yeah, calling Muhammad a pedophile is bad, but in the historical context, it was obviously nonsense.
Okay, my head is spinning. Two similar statements, two completely different outcomes. It can't just be about which religion is being criticized, right?
Yeah.
There has to be more to it than that.
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. It all boils down to this question of how a society balances, you know, freedom of expression on one hand and protecting religious beliefs on the other.
And honestly, who even gets to decide where that line is?
Exactly. And guess what? The presentation tackles that very question head on.
Yeah.
They bring in the big guns, the EMRK and EGMR.
Which are?
The European Convention on Human Rights and the European Court of Human Rights.
Ah, okay, so now we're going international. We're looking at human rights across Europe. It seems like this whole blasphemy law thing in Austria, it's not just some isolated incident.
Exactly. It's all connected. We're talking about some fundamental freedoms here. Articles 9 and 10 of the ECHR, they're super relevant.
What do they say?
They're all about freedom of thought, conscience, religion, expression, like the biggies. But here's the catch. While the convention lays out these rights, right, how they're actually put into practice, that's a whole other story.
So every country gets to decide how they want to interpret these rights.
Pretty much. Each country has its own legal traditions and interpretations and all that.
So it's like a choose your own adventure for human rights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm curious. What's Austria's track record like? How do they measure up?
Well, according to data from the ECHR, Austria has the third highest number of complaints about violations of Article 10.
Which is?
You know, the freedom of expression one.
No way. Seriously. Austria, third highest.
Third highest. Right after Turkey and Russia.
Whoa. That is not the company I would have pictured Austria keeping. That's concerning.
Tell me about it. It really makes you wonder about the state of free speech in Austria, right? Especially when religion gets thrown into the mix.
It seems like Austria might be progressive in a lot of ways, but when it comes to free speech, they might be a little behind the times, at least compared to their neighbors.
It seems that way, yeah.
So is there more to the story?
Oh, well, there's always more to the story. You ready for another layer of complexity?
Lay it on me.
The presentation, it shows this world map of blasphemy laws, right? And it's crazy to see how different countries deal with this stuff.
Like what?
Well, there are still 7 countries out there where you can get the death penalty for blasphemy.
Whoa, seriously. That's intense.
I know, right? But here's the thing. Most of Europe, including all of Austria's neighbors, they've gotten rid of those laws completely.
So Austria is just holding on to this law while everyone else is moving on. It's like they're stuck in a different century. But with all this talk about human rights in Europe, how can Austria justify these limits on free speech, especially when it comes to religion?
That's where things get really interesting. Remember, we're still trying to figure out how Austria walks that tightrope between, you know, letting people speak their minds and protecting religious beliefs.
Right.
Well, the presentation, it dives headfirst into that balancing act.
So Austria is trying to walk this tightrope, but it sounds like they might be like a little bit wobbly.
Yeah.
Especially with that whole third highest number of complaints thing.
Mm.
Where do they even begin to draw the line?
Well, the presentation tackles that head on. Slide 36, it has this word cloud, right, with hate and church right in the middle. And right below it, the question, wie die Grenze ziehen,
which means
how to draw the line.
Okay, so they're acknowledging the big question, but do they actually answer it?
Well, instead of a straight answer, they offer more like food for thought. They highlight five freedoms: freedom of speech, art, media, property, and religion.
It's like they're saying all freedoms are created equal, but some are more equal than others?
Maybe. Or maybe it's just like emphasizing how they all connect. But seriously, where does simply criticizing religion end and blasphemy begin? That feels very blurry.
Right. It's like, how do you actually define that line, legally speaking?
Well, it all comes down to this idea of mention verda. Human dignity. Slides 42 to 44, they get into the legal nitty-gritty, but basically it means every human being has inherent worth, you know, no matter their background or beliefs.
Okay, so human dignity is like a big deal in Austrian law, but isn't that also kind of subjective? What I consider criticism, you might consider an attack on your dignity.
Exactly. It's super nuanced, right?
Yeah.
And to show this, the presentation throws out some real head-scratchers. Like, one question asks, how do we define human dignity in a state that uses Sharia law? Another one is like, what about from the perspective of a migrant stuck in a detention center in Libya?
Whoa, okay, those are some heavy questions.
Right. It's easy to talk about human dignity in theory, but when you look at the real world, it gets really complicated.
For sure. And honestly, even in a supposedly secular society, religion still has a lot of power. Do you think that influences how these laws are actually used in Austria?
Definitely. And the presentation, it throws in these statements about tolerance on slide 51. And I don't know, they kind of rub me the wrong way.
Like what?
One is like, I have nothing against gay people, but they shouldn't kiss in public on the subway. Think of the children.
Ooh, I see where you're going with this.
Right. Or another one is like, I have nothing against atheists, but I don't think they should share their opinions publicly. It offends God and it hurts my feelings.
Oh, come on. That's such a cop-out. It's like, I'm not intolerant, B-U-T.
Exactly. And the presentation calls them out on it. They're like, well, if that's tolerance, I don't want it. But then again, that's just like my opinion, man. But who gets to decide how tolerant we have to be towards minorities?
It's the question of the century, isn't it? Who gets to decide?
Right. And then they hit us with a pop quiz. They ask, who should decide the necessary extent of tolerance? A dictator, a majority vote, the minority group themselves, a philosopher, a council of wise people, a committee, a judge, or only the left-wing Green Party?
Okay, that's a loaded question if I've ever heard one.
I know, right? They're not giving us any easy answers here.
That's for sure. But it's a good reminder that we're not just talking about, like, abstract ideas here. We're talking about real people and their lives, their freedoms. And with Austria becoming more secular, it seems like these questions are only going to get more and more complicated.
Definitely. Remember those stats from before? The ones about Catholicism declining and more people saying they're not religious?
Yeah.
That's not just data. That's a whole cultural shift.
It really makes you wonder, if fewer people identify with a religion, should it still be protected from criticism by law? It just feels, I don't know, a little off.
It's a question that gets at the heart of what free speech really means, especially in a diverse and changing world. And Austria, with that blasphemy law still hanging around, well, they're trying to figure it out in real time.
We've covered so much ground in this deep dive, it's been intense. From thought-provoking texts and legal loopholes to the meaning of tolerance and human dignity, it's a lot. But before we wrap it all up, there was that one last thing we haven't really talked about: personality rights.
Ah, yes. This is where maybe those antique goblets come back in. Personality rights. They're all about protecting a person's image, you know? Mm-hmm. Like how they're seen by the world, kind of how those goblets, they're like a physical link to the past, to a person's legacy. It's interesting to think about, you know, especially now with the social media and everything. How far do those rights go?
Mm.
And how do they work with freedom of speech, especially when we're talking about public figures, even religious ones?
It's like we've come full circle. We started with this quote about freedom of speech, and now we're talking about the limits of that freedom,
yep,
all to protect people's reputations.
Exactly. And Austria, they're trying to find that balance, you know, between their own legal traditions and this global conversation about human rights. It's a tricky dance.
That's for sure. So what do we learn today? This deep dive into Austrian law? I mean, it didn't give us all the answers, but it did leave us with some really big questions.
It always does. That's the fun part.
If a society says it believes in freedom of speech, should there be laws that specifically protect certain ideologies, like religion, from criticism?
Hmm.
And if those laws do exist, who gets to draw the line? These aren't just hypothetical questions. These have real consequences for real people.
Exactly. What's clear is that there's no simple answer, no one-size-fits-all solution. It's a conversation that every society, every generation needs to have.
Absolutely. And as we've seen, it's a conversation full of twists and turns, and the answers are far from simple. It's not just about Austria. It's about figuring out how to protect free expression while respecting everyone's beliefs and identities. We might not have all the answers, but hopefully this deep dive has shed some light on just how complex this issue really is. What are your thoughts on this whole balancing act? Let us know. We want to hear from you.